This episode of the Mountain Climbers Podcast is made with the support of Windsor Creative, a faith-based, non-profit graphic design studio that specializes in brand identity, illustration, print media, and web design. You know, we've loved Windsor Creative so much that we have used them for the branding of the Mountain Climbers Podcast. For more information about Windsor Creative, visit www.windsorcreative.org.nz. That's www.windsorcreative.org.nz, or look up Windsor Creative, one word, on Facebook. Today on the Mountain Climber Podcast, lessons from one of New Zealand's most well-known politicians. ACT Party leader David Seymour is here to talk politics. Do you want to become Prime Minister?
Oh.
Childhood.
Maybe I'm just fundamentally unlikable.
And one of New Zealand's most popular TV shows.
What did Dancing with the Stars teach you about yourself?
That I can be about 10 kgs lighter.
I'm Duncan Tolmie, and the Mountain Climber Podcast starts right now. Everybody, and welcome to the Mountain Climbers Podcast. I'm very honoured today to be joined by David Seymour, the leader of the ACT Party. Thank you for joining us, and I think it'd be interesting for people to know the method of transport that you got here today, David.
Oh, well, first of all, Duncan, I think it's such a great initiative, and thank you for having me on. I just love my e-bike. It's got a 500-watt motor in the front, which is technically illegal, but doesn't seem to hurt anyone else, so that's our moral compass. Do no harm. And what's more, you know, 500 watts is about how much Lance Armstrong used to put out when he was taking performance-enhancing drugs.
Really?
So this is like being on a tandem bike with Lance Armstrong, and it's
wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of things, I've just got a little... One of my friends, his dad loves the ACT Party and everything that you stand for, and you especially, and he is just one crazy fan. We, in the 2017 election cycle, I had all my friends over, and he stopped in with an ACT Party t-shirt and badges and everything.
What a legend.
Yeah,
what's his name?
His name is Bryce.
What an absolute legend.
So I was just wondering, have you had any crazy supporters in your time as leader?
Certainly type I have. I mean, to stand for a set of principles that are at the fringe of what, you know, the most New Zealand politics is about, and yet know that they must be right because you've got ample evidence from around the world that they work, you know, you've got to be a little bit crazy. Most
yeah.
people, I mean, you know, the sensible thing in politics is to economise on the time you spend thinking about it, because the most informed voter and the least informed voter both wake up on Sunday morning after the election with exactly the same government. So anyone that really invests their time thinking hard about, you know, what sort of policies we want and how we can make the boat go faster in New Zealand, you have to be a bit crazy. But I love my crazy supporters.
Yeah, and to have so many crazy supporters, they must really believe in the vision that you have for our country. If you were to sum that up in one sentence, your vision for New Zealand, what would that be?
It's opportunity through freedom. And, you know, to elaborate on that, it recognises that ultimately it's called self-esteem for a very good reason. Only you can really build it. A million people can tell you you're great, but to really feel good about yourself, you've got to take action and set about achieving things for yourself. That's why it's called self-esteem, and that's why we think opportunity comes from the freedom to achieve and to chart your own path.
What got you into politics?
So I was growing up in Whangarei up north, 2 hours north of Auckland, and one of the most important decisions I made in my life was to come down to be a boarder at Auckland Grammar. And Auckland Grammar is, you know, a school that I'm deeply passionate about. I don't think it's the right school for everyone, but certainly the right school for me. And the time I was leaving, the then government was introducing NCEA. The you know, principal at the time had this massive battle with Trevor Mallard, who at that time was the education minister. And I just sat there thinking, why is the government that I previously thought to be a very benign force, you know, listen to your teacher, the government builds the roads, people who police are people who help us with all the things you were told as a kid. And I thought, this government is trying to undermine the academia and the rigor of the school that really changed my life for the better. So that set me into, you know, just questioning, does the government always have your best interests in mind? Or is it actually just a group of individuals who, you know, just as flawed as the people they represent, except that in politics your incentives are much worse.
Mm. But I don't recall, did you study politics at university or was it engineering?
You know, I did a couple of papers, and it's funny, probably about once or twice a week I'll get somebody who'll come and ask me, I want to go into politics, what should I study? And the answer is whatever you like. You know, like, there's this view that you have to learn certain subject matter and content in order to do a profession. Now, if you want to be a dentist, I highly recommend you do dentistry, right? But for most other things, it's a question of, you know, can you build up skills? I mean, do a Bachelor of Arts, but make sure you get A's, because the ability to read a wide variety of sources and synthesize that into one coherent, engaging narrative, i.e. write an essay, well, that's going to be really valuable across a whole range of areas throughout your career.
Would you recommend going to university?
I'd have to know about the person.
Okay.
So, you know, I was talking to the Plumbers Guild, the sort of governing body of plumbers. They've got people who are coming into their apprenticeship scheme with these MIC degrees. And all they've really done is borrowed $50,000 and wasted 3 years of their life, and now they're doing plumbing. You know, just getting a degree in and of itself is pointless. I think you should do a degree if you are interested in the subject and if you think you will continue growing at a reasonable rate. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it because your friend's doing it or because you feel that your family will be proud to have someone doing a degree or you just think it's, you know, a way of delaying your entry into the real world, then just stop yourself. Because honestly, you waste, you know, $50,000-$100,000 of lost earnings and student fees and all that stuff, then you come out the other end and you're just, you know, you're 23, but really you don't have many more skills than an 18-year-old because you haven't really been in an artificial environment.
Mm. In 2015, you were named the Trans Tasman Politician of the Year. Mm. Why is one of the best politicians in the Trans Tasman not in the government?
Well, I mean, only half the politicians are in the government at any given time anyway. Mm. So I was in the government in 2015, if that helps. But look, I think also opposition plays a really important role. So, for instance, I have a private members bill, which is the end-of-life choice bill that will allow, you know, people at the end of their life who are suffering, who can't be helped by palliative care in their view, to choose how and when they die, or how they go and when they go. And so that's something that, funnily enough, I actually turned down being a minister in the Crown so I could remain an independent MP and pursue a private member's bill. So there's things you can do even if you're not in government. Mm. And at the same time, it's just democracy, right? Like, you know, sometimes you've got to lose, otherwise it's not a democracy.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into the specifics of policy here, but some of them, particularly the end-of-life choice bill that you've implemented, is very controversial, and policies that I think a lot of politicians would be scared to go after and rather afraid to go after so strongly. Why is it important for you to tackle these issues head on?
Well, I take issue with the idea it's controversial. It's actually a very uncontroversial issue. You know, consistently, if you ask New Zealanders, 70% of them say they agree with it.
But it's still very emotive. So the other 30%, even if it is only 30%, have that view very strongly.
Well, it's not even that. It's, you know, there's another 10 or 15 who, you know, say they don't know or aren't sure. So definitely not controversial for them. And then there's 10 or 15% who are opposed for their personal reasons. So it's probably one of the least controversial policies. And actually not a lot of policies that 70% of people agree on. On the other hand, you know, and am I afraid? Well, no, I'm not afraid of a minority of people because, you know, they can make a lot of noise and they have their reasons and motivations for doing that. But ultimately, the most important skill in politics is the ability to count. And on this, I'd be pretty scared to oppose it on that basis.
Okay. All right. I want to be honest here. More people know about you than most of the ministers, especially young people, than most of the ministers that are in our government at the moment. What is your key, or been the key, to becoming one of New Zealand's most well-known politicians?
Well, I mean, I've had exposure as a party leader, so that may have helped.
Mm.
You know, if you look at the party leaders, well, you know, Winston Peters has been the leader of New Zealand First since 1992. I've been the leader of ACT since 2014. You know, Jacinda Ardern's been the leader of Labour since August 2017. Simon Bridges has been the leader for less than a year. And James Shaw, I think, has been the co-leader of the Greens for maybe about 3 years. So, you know, I'm actually the second longest serving party leader, and that gives you a certain amount of exposure. But also, I'd like to think that it's a certain amount of sincerity and authenticity. I mean, I went into politics to change public policy for the better, because I believe that if you look around the world, every country has a bunch of things it can't change. You know, Russia can't change the fact that it's cold. Hong Kong can't change the fact that it's tiny. New Zealand can't change the fact that it's a million miles from just about anywhere. However, every country can change its public policy. And if we look around the world, there are countries with enormous natural advantages. Look at Argentina, for instance. I mean, the name is literally named after Argentum, the Latin word for silver. That's how rich it was. It was a massive, just an enormous silver mine, really. They got the best climate. They got the great farming. They got so much stuff in Argentina, and it's a povo country because of bad management. Mm-hmm. You know, I can give you lots of examples, but public policy is an area where we can make a difference. And I sincerely, I came out of, you know, being an engineer, working for public policy think tanks. I'm proud of what we've done to make policy better. And I think, I'd like to think that that has a certain amount of sincerity and that resonates with people.
Okay. What is your ultimate dream?
Oh, look, I'd like to be able to look back on a political career and say, you know, I've made New Zealand a better place through New Zealand through better public policy for all New Zealanders. So, you know, we did that with charter schools. We said, actually, there's a bunch of kids who are locked into a system absolutely failing them, many of them enrolled at schools, not actually attending, and ultimately it goes back to that self-esteem thing. They feel useless. They're told, often explicitly, that they won't succeed because of their race. It's an outrage. And we said, actually, well, you know what? You're entitled to a certain amount of education funding. We're going to let your community set up new schools and you take your funding there. Good on you. We changed thousands of kids' lives doing that. That was huge. And I want to do a lot more of it.
Do you want to become Prime Minister?
Look, I'd like to be. But I also know that the kinds of policy improvements I want to do are always going to be hard to sell to 51% of people at a time. I mean, I'll give you a classic example. Everyone in Auckland, probably New Zealand, should have a transponder in their car, and they should have a payment plan for using roads, and it should vary with the time of day. Why? Because at the moment, at peak time, people that get on the bus and do the right thing get caught in the same congestion as people that sit in their cars and clog up the roads. If you had pricing that jumped up at during peak times, the people on the bus would get a big dividend and the people in cars would get whacked. You know. So that's probably one of the most powerful things we could do to reduce emissions, ease congestion, make housing more affordable, allow people to get around the city more frequently. I don't think a prime minister could sell that policy. I think a minor party leader could and could negotiate for it to happen within a coalition.
So do you enjoy the fact that you're a minor party?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at what we've achieved in the ACT Party, we have managed to do a number of things that have stood the test of time. I mean, you look at the previous 9 years, well, three strikes, ACT Party, 90-day trials, ACT Party, charter schools, ACT Party. You know, there's a theme here. Most of the National Party's policies have just been adopted by the Labour Party because they're basically the same. ACT, on the other hand, you know, we do actually get in there and shake things up and improve public policy. I'm really proud of it.
Still to come in part two of this conversation.
Maybe I'm just fundamentally unlikable.
David Seymour opens up about the death of his mother.
What was growing up like for David? And of course, Dancing with the Stars.
I'm kind of a little bit stuffed here.
Learn the real reason why David Seymour went on the show and what he weeps for next time on the Mountain Climbers Podcast.
I'm Duncan Tolmie, and you've been listening to the Mountain Climbers Podcast. To stay connected, like the Mountain Climbers Podcast on Facebook today.
This episode of the Mountain Climbers Podcast is made with the support of Windsor Creative, a faith-based, non-profit graphic design studio that specializes in brand identity, illustration, print media, and web design. You know, we've loved Windsor Creative so much that we have used them for the branding of the Mountain Climbers Podcast. For more information about Windsor Creative, visit www.windsorcreative.org.nz. That's www.windsorcreative.org.nz. Or look up Windsor Creative, one word, on Facebook.